Dennis entities.
My name is Elegan Chabeleng. I'm the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Labor. Can members introduce themselves? Over to you.
Morning, I'm Shelly Makubela Mashed, a member of this committee representing the African National Congress.
Molweni, ngu Eric Nyagama from the ANC.
Tabo Masrumuli.
It's Ian Wallace. I'm officially from the DA, but in view of the fact that there's no other opposition members, I suppose I represent COPE and the ID and the UDM and the IFP and everybody else who should be in the room. Thank you.
Good morning, members. I'm Zanele Keto from the Auditor General.
I have the DG to introduce his team.
Chair, good morning. Honourable members, good morning. I would, with your permission, Chair, ask that each and every one of us does the introduction. My name is Ngosinathi Ntlego. I work for the Department of Labour, sir. Thank you.
My name is Lerato Molevatsi, and I am Corporate Services.
I'm Les Kettle, that's Department of Labour, Deputy Director General.
Peggy Matuna from the Department of Labour, Chief Financial Officer.
Mongezi Mabisa, the Chairman of the Compensation Fund.
Sheikh Mkonto, Compensation Commissioner.
Powa Sirue, URF Commissioner.
Sam Rotaba, Department of Labour.
Siyande Ngwawe, Department of Labour.
Kenny Fick, Department of Labour.
Sipande Vele, Department of Labor.
Musa Zondi, Department of Labor.
Afsal Subedar, CCMA.
Marcos Khololo, CCMA, Financial Officer.
Noreen Khan, CCMA Director.
Department of Labor, UAF.
Tanya Cohen, CCMA, governing body.
Ibaka Namashila, CCMA, governing body.
Luna Rancho, CCMA, governing body.
Silomusai, productive chief.
Rebecca Kala, collecting for Tara.
I just love to see
how we help the authority.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now that we know who is in the meeting, let me start by congratulating the department, DG, for your well work done. The audit reports were very good this year. Lots of improvement. I think the challenge now is how do we will we be able to start to sustain this? And we can only be able to sustain this if we reduce the matters of your emphasis, you know, and ensuring that where there is regression, we make sure that we make progress rather than going engaging the reverse gear when we are moving forward. Congratulations and keep it up. And you all deserve a big hand. It means everybody has put in their work. We going to make some few changes on the program. The committee report will come last because it will need only members of the committee to approve the program. And I'm suggesting that the AG report, there shouldn't be discussions after that. Immediately after the AG report, the department gives their report and then we engage. I think that will be in order, and it will save us a lot of time. May I give over to the DG to brief us? Over to it. The AG, I'm sorry. It's a too many G's, and you know, you are the DG of the AG.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. Good morning, honorable members. Members from my portfolio, my doll portfolio. Chairperson, I think specifically when you congratulated the doll portfolio for good progress made, you sort of put a challenge to me when I present the audit outcomes of the doll portfolio. In that I need to present a very positive picture, and I will do my best to do so where there is, you know, a positive reflection. Chairperson, before I start, my presentation is in two parts. I am giving an overview of what the audit outcomes means, and then we will get into the audit outcomes of the DOL portfolio. And before I do that, I would just like to indicate to the House, to the committee members and the audience here, that this 2011 signifies the 100th year of the AGSA being in existence. And again, we've been auditing predetermined objectives for 5 years now. You would all know that we're moving towards expressing an opinion on predetermined objectives in the audit report. We are not yet doing that. We are reflecting that in the management report. But the journey that we have traveled since 2005-06 is now 5 years, which means all of us should be ready on reporting in relation to the predetermined objectives. Having said that, Chairperson, if we go to the, there are copies in front of the members, and if you go to the second page of the presentation, it has the reputation promise of the AGSA, and Chairperson and committee members, request that you hold any member of the AGSA to this reputation promise. We live by this reputation promise, and we do exist to strengthen our country's democracy and promote public accountability. And I believe that through our audit outcomes, we have achieved this, and we are in the process of enhancing this. Chairperson, you know that government initiative is to achieve clean administration, clean audit outcomes in 2014, and we have analyzed what it means to have a clean administration and clean audit outcomes. It means that the audit report will have no findings on the financials, and before I go into the details, let me just say that in our audit report, we reflect on three areas. We reflect on the financials, we reflect on the predetermined objectives, we reflect on compliance with rules and regulations. And all of this signifies how internal controls are operating in an entity. Now, clean administration, clean audit outcomes means that an entity or department will have no findings on financial statements. What is happening currently in the public sector, the no findings in financials are mostly as a result of the audit process. We identify a lot of financial misstatements that are corrected at year end to achieve a clean financial opinion. This means that if entities and departments did not have material adjustments at the end of or during the audit process, they would have received a qualification. The argument is that audit adjustments are part of the audit process, and we can argue that, and from our view, yes, it is, but in the public sector, because there's no monthly reports that are presented that are complete and accurate, proper interim financial statements presented, we end up with significant adjustments at the end of the year. And as a result, we are saying that we encourage entities and departments to monitor their financial and performance reports on a monthly basis to ensure that information that they present is credible, is reliable, is complete and accurate. And this will minimize the amount of material misstatements that are identified during the audit. And we're saying there shouldn't be any findings on predetermined objectives, and there should be no findings with regard to compliance with laws and regulations. We do report on internal controls, and when we reflect on internal controls again, there's three aspects of internal controls that we focus on. It's leadership, financial and performance management, and governance. Under leadership, we look at the tone at the top. The tone at the top to address the human resources issues, to address the IT processes, monitoring and evaluation. Under financial and performance management, we look at supporting documentation, whether the systems that are used to produce the financial and performance reports can be relied on and produce reliable and credible information, which means the IT systems. And under governance, we look at the effectiveness of internal audit and the audit committee. And therefore, we're saying that if we achieve clean administration, then the internal controls should be working and we shouldn't have any findings under internal controls. How do we as the AGSA contribute towards this clean administration? The AGSA is making a commitment to in three areas. One is to communicate messages, audit messages, that are simple, clear and relevant. We identify our stakeholders' needs and expectations, and we address these. Chairperson, as you know, we are governed by the auditing and accounting standards, which are quite technical. So we commit to simplifying what governs the auditing to the man in the street, to Parliament, so that Parliament can hold entities in their portfolio accountable through understanding these messages that we communicate. We communicate, we commit to the stability of leadership, and this we have achieved through our constant interaction with the leadership of the entities, our quarterly reviews and our quarterly interactions with the executive authorities. And we commit to influencing the governance structures to ensure that there is strong oversight through these governance structures. The next slide, Chairperson, deals with the legislative requirements for predetermined objectives. These are the requirements that we look at when we audit predetermined objectives. And as we have discussed during our interaction, Chairperson, we will have a training session for the members on audit of performance information and the audit process on the financials at a later stage. And this will be discussed and clarified in detail. And the following slide deals with the audit criteria. This is the criteria that we use to audit predetermined objectives. And again, this is the criteria that is set by National Treasury in their guidelines on predetermined objectives. And the next slide, Chairperson, it deals with where the predetermined objectives come from, how it then is translated into the set plan of entities and departments, guided by the National Treasury, the implementation thereof, monitoring and evaluation thereof, in-year monitoring by specific oversight committees, including this portfolio committee. And the main thing, the main message of this slide is the bottom part, which talks about the institution's operational plans and individual performance agreement. You'll see that the picture is sitting on this specific column line here. And what it means is that the outcome, the achievement of the departments or entities' goals is supported by individual performance. And therefore, individual performance management in an entity is very, very critical for the achievement of the entity's strategic goals, which means that we need to have performance contracts in place. They need to be monitored and evaluated properly, and appropriate steps should be taken where needed. And Chairperson, this will be reflected as we discuss the outcomes of the portfolio. Chairperson, before I hand over to Daisy, I would like to just indicate that, as I have said, we've traveled a journey with our entities and departments, and we are in a position where we have reflected all of these things that I have discussed. The challenge now is to look at credibility and reliability of information. We do know that information is presented to different committees, to different individuals. However, whether this information is credible and reliable, we do not know. I would like to put a challenge to the committees, the audit committees, to internal audit of the entities and departments, to have an agenda point to discuss credibility and reliability of information. Information that comes to the portfolio committee should have gone through this test of credibility and reliability. And the portfolio committee must get assurance from entities and departments that information that they present is credible and is reliable. This means that when we test credibility and reliability of information, we then confirming sustainability of the outcomes that we have received. We are testing sustainability of improving in the audit outcomes. And that, with that, Chairperson, I would like to hand over to Daisy to present the audit outcomes of the DOR portfolio.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. On slide 8, are the page numbers. Okay. I'll be presenting about 12 slides. Unfortunately, I don't have the page numbers with me. But on this slide, it's all the portfolio with its entities. The next slide is. Based on the acronyms that are it's interpretation of acronyms that we've used in the slides, and then from slide 10 up to slide 20, it's specific outcomes per audit per entity, and then we have slide 21, which gives us a conclusion on the summary of all the DOL entities, all the entities within the DOL portfolio. Okay. On this slide, what we have is, we'll just start with the DOL portfolio, with the Department of Labor. In the current year, we had an unqualified opinion, as compared to the prior years where we had a qualified opinion on the PPP assets relating to the Siemens contract. In the current year, on compensation fund, we had a qualification on revenue, receivables, and claims. As compared to the prior years, in 08-09 we had a disclaimer, 09-10 we had a qualified opinion, and in the current year qualified, which really doesn't show an improvement. In terms of, if you look at what they were qualified on last year compared to this year, however, there is an improvement in terms of the number of findings that were raised. If we look at URF, they've had an unqualified opinion for the past 3 years, and in the current year, there was actually nothing reported on under even non-compliance with laws and regulations, or even irregular expenditure or fruitless and wasteful expenditure. If you look at SERC, that is the sheltered employment factories, we had a qualification on valuation of inventory as well as a valuation of assets, of fixed assets. The opinion expressed was qualified as compared to last year, which was an adverse opinion, so there was an improvement. In terms of NetLeg, we've had an unqualified opinion for the past 3 years. However, there was just one issue, which I'll be going into when I go into the detailed findings. With regards to CCMA, we had unqualified opinions for the past 3 years, except one issue that was raised, which I'll go into when we go into the detailed explanations. For Productivity SA, we had as well unqualified opinions for the past 3 years. And if we look at the trend within the labor portfolio, for the past 2 years, three audits out of seven were qualified, and in the current year, only two out of seven was qualified. Therefore, quite an improvement from 43% to 29%. Okay. On this slide, I've got acronyms which I'll be using for my detailed slides as to the detailed slides that I'll be presenting on. AQ means a qualification, AD means an adverse opinion, DI is a disclaimer, EOM is emphasis of matter, CM compliance with laws and regulations, ROLRR report on other legal and regulatory requirements, and OR is other reports. For the DOL, for for the Department of Labor, as I've just alluded, we had qualification on assets, on major assets in the prior year. However, in the current year, that was cleared, which is an improvement. On irregular expenditure, we had under compliance with laws and regulation. There was an irregular expenditure which was incurred as a result of non-compliance with supply chain management policies, which is a partial improvement as compared to the prior year. In relation to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, for the 09-10 we had an emphasis of matter paragraph. However, in the current year, there was nothing to report on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I think based on the fact that management has put in place structures and systems and control to make sure that fruitless and wasteful expenditure is detected and prevented on time. On predetermined objectives, remember, on the audit of predetermined objectives, we don't report in the audit report. However, we report it under, if I could just go back to the last, to that other slide, we report it under ROLRR, report on other legal and regulatory requirements. However, the opinion that we express it in a management report. So if you compare to the prior year, it had an adverse opinion. However, in the current year, we had a qualified opinion. And the qualified opinion was based on the following issues. Okay. The strategic plan was not aligned to the indicators as required by Treasury requirements. We had plan targets were not measurable in terms of the identified required performance. In terms of time bound, they were not time bound. It was not specific as to when they will be achieving those. In terms of reliability of information, the indicators were not well defined. And in terms of the public employment services, validity and accuracy of reported targets could not be verified because of supporting documentation not being provided to us. Okay. If we go to the annual financial statement, we're still on page 10. If you go to the annual financial statement performance and annual report of the department, the issues that we raised here were, is that material misstatements were identified during the audit, which related to the financial statements. However, these were subsequently corrected during the audit. And therefore, that's why we raise it as a compliance issue, because in terms of the National Treasury Framework, when the department or any entity submits its financial statements, it's got to be accurate, valid, and it's got to be of a quality, of the required quality. In terms of expenditure management, we had issues back to irregular expenditure, which was identified, relating to non-compliance with supply chain management. We had issues where creditors were not paid within 30 days, as well as the issue of making sure that the PPP assets are monitored in terms of Treasury Regulation 16.7.1. If we look at investigations, the department did not have any investigation during the current year. However, let me just say that again.
the department did not have any investigations during the current year that related to its operations. However, in the prior year, there were functions that were transferred from the department to the Department of Education of Higher Education. And a program within the department called Indlela. There was a forensic audit which was instituted by the Department of Higher Education, and the investigation was completed, and the report had alleged fraud allegations. There were alleged fraud allegations on supply chain and misconduct of staff. The report was given to the department, and this was subsequent to year end, and at the time that we were reporting on, the department was currently reviewing the report, and therefore we had nothing to report as at year end. Regarding human resource management and regarding human resource management and compensation, we had only two issues. That were reported in the audit report, and that related to performance assessment of senior managers that were not conducted during the year as required by the PSR, as well as vacant positions that were not filled within the required 12 months. That's the end of the outcomes of the Department of Labor. Chair, if you can give me the opportunity to go further into compensation fund, or should I wait for questions?
Your presentation, and then from there we'll continue.
With regard to the compensation fund, which is an entity within the Department of Labor, it had a qualified opinion in the current year as compared to the prior, which had a qualified opinion as well. We had issues on the restatement of corresponding figures. We identified errors or misstatements on the financial statements, which required the entity to go back and correct those errors. And the errors related to PPE, revenue, receivables, and claims that were reported on. And if you look at material losses through a criminal conduct, the entity has a risk a unit, and the risk unit identified losses that were conducted through criminal conduct, and which were either done by employees or service providers. And the entity is currently in the process of either investigating those, or some of them have been finalized, and others have been handed over to the South African police. With regard to irregular expenditure, the entity had a lot of issues on non-compliance with the supply chain management process. This is mainly because the entity was using an outdated supply chain management regulation. However, for the first 9 months, however, during the last 3 months, They did use the correct supply chain management guidelines.
If we look at the sort of opinion expressed, we had an emphasis of matter. The first three, we had an emphasis of matter, which was unchanged as compared to the prior years as well. In the current year, we do not have any fruitless and wasteful. We did not identify any fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which is an improvement to the prior year. And regarding the report on predetermined objectives, which I've already said that we report on the opinion that is expressed in the management report, there is a partial regression because in the 09-10 it was an unqualified opinion. However, in the current year, it was qualified, and based on the following issues, that there were variances that were identified between the planned and reported targets that were identified. The planned and reported targets at some instances were not specific. There were actual occurrences or actual instances which were identified, objectives that which were actual achievements which were identified but were not reported in the predetermined objective report. Reported performance indicators were not valid at some instances because the supporting documentation provided could not support the reported indicators. In terms of revenue and receivable management, as well as claims and payables, the two components actually should be in compliance with the Act, which enables the compensation fund, which is COEDA. So in terms of the two, the revenue and receivable management and claims and payable management, what we identified there was that the two components did not comply with the requirements of COEDA. And therefore, in terms of compliance with COEDA, if you look at the 09-10 and the 10-11 opinions expressed, there was non-compliance, and therefore the evaluation based on our evaluation is that that has not changed, and therefore the department needs to work on, the entity needs to work on that, on those issues. And the issues that were identified was that in some instances incorrect tariffs were used, in some instances incorrect penalties amounts were used to for employees to pay over to the compensation fund. If we look at claims and payables, incomplete records were provided to us. Proof of earnings, which is supposed to be submitted by employees, were at some instances not provided because the file, in terms of the file, was incomplete. And therefore, those are the issues that we raised. If we go to procurement and contract management, I've already spoken about supply chain management and compliance with supply chain management. The same issues that I've spoken about there that we qualify them on also relate to non-compliance with supply chain management and were reported under non-compliance with laws and regulations. Our evaluation remains unchanged as compared to the prior year. And in terms of human resource management, as we have already spoken about, there were issues on leave management relating to the provinces. What happened here was that leave forms were not submitted timely to head office or to the compensation fund for timely capturing or timely processing. there were instances where employees were performing work outside their employment and without the necessary approval by the executive authority. This was a regression as compared to our evaluation is that it's a regression as compared to the prior year. Going forward, if we look at contingent liabilities, this is not your normal contingent liabilities. If you look at if I can just give a brief background on the compensation fund. In terms of the fund, they are supposed to get securities for the other two entities that are performing work on their behalf. That is the Rand Mutual Association as well as the Federated Employers Mutual Association. These associations have a license to perform work as per quota. However, in terms of the Act, they are supposed to provide security to the entity, to compensation fund, to ensure that in instances that they cannot pay out claims, compensation fund will be responsible to pay out those claims. So in this instance, what we found was that the securities were not updated or were quite outdated, and therefore in instances where these funds do go down or are liquidated, compensation fund will have a liability to make sure that those claims are paid. If we compare to last year, our evaluation, it's a regression because it was not identified in the prior year. And in terms of investigations, I've already alluded to investigations. We have reported it under other reporting requirements. And I think what makes us more comfortable is that the entity's controls are picking up non-compliance or are picking up issues relating to fraud in the entity. If we look at the evaluation compared to prior year, it has remained unchanged. And the next one, that's the unemployment insurance fund. As I've already alluded to that, we had nothing to report on the predetermined objective, which was quite an improvement as compared to the prior year, where they had a qualified opinion, but because of management intervention, there was an improvement, and in the current year, it was unqualified. If we look at compliance with laws and regulations, there were no matters reported, and therefore it remains unchanged. That's the end of your unemployment insurance fund.
Shepherd Snapping, the next one is SEF, Sheltered Employment Factories. I think SEF, we've recorded an improvement in terms of finances. They were qualified in the current year. Previously, they had a disclaimer of opinion. They had some assistance, and I think what is left in SEF mainly relates to the previous year's balances, which were not corrected. The current year was clean, it was corrected. It's the previous year that was not corrected that resulted in a qualification that needs to be cleaned up.
on predetermined objectives. They had an adverse opinion, and mainly because of the indicators that were not measurable. So we were not in a position to audit the predetermined objectives that were set because they were not measurable. And then they had a few emphasis of meta paragraphs, and can I just emphasize and just say that an emphasis of meta paragraph is not a qualification. However, it relates to information that is critical for the user to understand. The information is appropriately disclosed in the financial statements. However, we are highlighting this information for the user and for Parliament specifically, which might need Parliament's attention and to hold the entity accountable. They reported material losses through criminal conduct due to inventory theft, and they had significant write-offs on inventory and debt. The indication there that is that stock is not moving at the pace which it's supposed to move, and hence the write-off. Debts are not collected, hence the debt write-off. They reported irregular expenditure relating to supply chain, which means supply chain processes were not followed, so they need to jack up their supply chain process. We reported fruitless and wasteful expenditure relating to interest on late payments and cell phone payments for staff that were seconded from DOL. They restated previous year's figures because a lot of corrections needed to be done on the financial. Previous year's figures were amended, and we are bringing that to the attention of the user. On compliance with rules and regulations on human resource management, performance contracts for staff was not signed, acting allowances were paid for lower positions, and they had a number of vacant key positions were vacant during the year. That needs to be addressed as a matter of urgency. Financial statements had material adjustments. I spoke to that earlier. It's therefore critical that once the positions are filled, SEF implements a mechanism to produce monthly financial statements, monthly accounts that are complete and accurate, that are credible and reliable. Expenditure management, the accounting officer, who is the accounting officer of the department, did not prevent irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And again, while I'm on this point, I think I need to indicate that SEF is accounted for as a trading entity. However, the listing of SEF has not been completed as yet. Revenue management, debt collection, I spoke to it earlier. We reported it under emphasis of META. It's an issue of non-compliance with treasury regulations. Investigations, that's an investigation relating to the inventory loss on the theft that I spoke about earlier. And I think basically with regard to SEF, the critical issue there is to fill the vacancies and to strengthen the finance unit. And again, if I just can just reflect on what I said earlier, predetermined objectives, sometimes called performance information relating to service delivery, we are saying that the focus there needs to be strengthened and needs to be as strong as the finance unit, because reporting on predetermined objectives takes as much an effort, and the processes that we follow when we audit predetermined objectives are similar to those that we follow when we audit financial statements. So it's therefore critical that resources relating to the predetermined objectives are strengthened, and SEF is one of the entities that needs strong resources. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I'll continue on with NEDLAC. If we look at the predetermined objectives,
We had an unqualified opinion, which has been maintained from prior year to the current year as well. However, if you look at compliance with laws and regulations, we had in the prior year we had no matters reported, but in the current year we had matters reported, which was a partial regression. And that was the matter that was reported on in the current year was it's related to governance issues relating to the council and the audit committee. In terms of the treasury regulations and in terms of governance guidelines, the council's responsibility is to delegate the functioning of the internal audit to the audit committee. However, if your audit committee is not functioning effectively, or is not meeting as required, or it's not even reviewing the internal audit activities, then we have an issue. In this instance, we found that the audit committee was not functioning as effective as it was supposed to, and therefore the council had responsibility to ensure that internal the audit committee was functioning as required. That was the only issue that was reported under in compliance with laws and regulations for NEDLAC. And if we evaluate the progress from current year to the prior from the prior year to the current year, it's a partial regression that needs to be looked at.
Chairperson, the CCMA, we've seen that they've had clean financial opinions for the past 3 years, and they obtained a clean financial opinion, so they were unqualified for the year under review. And the slide on CCMA gives sort of a trend from 2009-10 to 2010-11. Last year we reported fruitless and wasteful expenditure. There wasn't any for the year under review. We reported irregular expenditure. There was a huge increase in the previous year on irregular expenditure. The CCMA undertook to review their policies and procedures in line with the Treasury regulations, which was done, and hence the improvement there. The emphasis of matter, as I have explained earlier, that it's not a qualification. It's on relating to two areas. Three areas. The going concern, this is relating to the cash management within the, not really cash management, but how they sort of struggle with the funding in terms of their operations. And then the contingent liability relating to two issues, the lawsuits and the RASTAR issues, and these came from last year. So it's nothing new there. So they have really nothing new that we haven't reported in the previous year. Predetermined objectives, they were unqualified as opposed to qualified last year. They have also addressed the issues that we raised in the previous year with regard to the predetermined objectives. So we had no significant matters to report under predetermined objectives. Compliance with laws and regulations, we had nothing to report on the CCMA, whereas last year we had matters to report under compliance with laws and regulations. The indication there, CCMA has improved, and they then need to maintain the good progress that they have made from the previous years. Thank you, Chair.
The last entity on the DOL portfolio is Productivity SA. In terms of predetermined objectives as well as compliance with laws and regulations, we had nothing to report. The systems are working as required. There is accountability. People are taking their job seriously, as well as responsibilities.
That's been very honest. Chair, just to conclude on the entity as a whole and what we think should be done by management to improve on the outcomes that we've just deliberated on. In terms of the Department of Labor, what we're saying is good work. They've done well on the unqualified opinion. The financials are fine. However, we still need to maintain the unqualified opinion. We need to sustain it, and we need to improve the good outcomes. We need to improve on the good outcomes on compliance. If you go to compensation fund, intervention is required there. The executive authorities and the accounting authorities are aware of that, and I think there is a little bit of progress that has been put into this. However, intervention is required in terms of records management, in terms of skills improvement, and in terms of the overall financial management. In terms of URF, we need to maintain the good outcomes, as well as NEDLAC and CCMA and Productivity SA. If we look at SEF, it has improved in terms of the qualification. However, intervention is still required from the accounting authorities and the executive authorities. That's the conclusion on the labor portfolio from our side, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Melita. The HS has given a report. Could we go over to the chairperson to, and then after that we can ask questions later after the presentation, so that we have more time to. You wanted to say something, please? Now I was saying we should move, we'll give his report, and then after that we can engage, ask questions, and that's what I said earlier. Over to you, DJ.
Honorable Chairwoman, I'm still trying to hook this thing up onto the Chair, thanks very much. Thank you very much for this opportunity, honourable members. You press this thing down. Yes. The presentation that we're going to go through consists of six focal points, and that's the kind of outline that we're just packing up there. In terms of our vision, our overall mandate is about striving to to contribute towards a conducive labor market, which is entirely conducive to investment, economic growth, employment creation, and decent work. And for this to be realized, Chair, we have to emphasize on the area of our mission through ensuring that we update and develop required legislation and regulations. We conduct inspections and compliance monitoring and enforcement. We also advance and advocate protection of human rights. We also have got to provide employment services. We also have got to advocate promotion of equity at workplace. We also have got to emphasize on the issue of social and income protection, and we do this kind of work through the work that we undertake through the UIF and the Compensation Fund. We also emphasize on the issue of social dialogue, and social dialogue takes the form of the work that we do at NEDLAC, CCMA, and other entities that fall under the Department of Labor. In this report, Chairperson, would do a reflection in terms of work that has been done, and that's going to be the orientation. We will want to capture the experience, in other words, work that has already been undertaken, but also in that experience, we want to reflect as to what it is that is, what it is that we have been able to do and do correctly, and what it is that perhaps we have not been able to do and do correctly. But importantly, it's also the issue of conceptualizing that particular form of experience and how that conceptualization in itself would also need to feed back into ongoing work of the department. But this reflection will center itself mainly around the service delivery outcomes, and specifically those that are applicable to the Department of Labor. Outcome 4 talks to the decent employment through inclusive economic growth and two other outcomes. Outcome 11 talks to the creation of a better South Africa and a contribution to a better and safer Africa and the world. Outcome 11 talks to efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service and an empowerment and inclusive, empowered and inclusive citizenship. Now, in mirroring our strategic objectives against the service delivery outcome and inputs, that's what this slide talks about. On outcome 4, decent employment through inclusive economic growth, the tabulation from 4.1 to 4.6 deals with how that particular outcome has got to be achieved. On the side of the Department of Labor, ours is to contribute to employment creation, promote equity in the labor market, protecting vulnerable workers, strengthening social protection, promoting sound labor relations, monitoring the impact of legislation. On outcome 11, creating a better South African contribution and contributing to a better and safer Africa in a better world context. Our strategic objective is to strengthen multilateral and bilateral relations. On outcome 12, an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service and empowered and inclusive citizenship. Ours, in meeting that particular objective, is to strengthen the capacity of the labor market institutions, as well as reacting to outcome 12 on service delivery quality and access, through strengthening the institutional capacity of the department. The following slides, essentially, they talk to, yes, the specific outcomes, but importantly is the strategic objectives in terms of how we're fed as the Department of Labor in meeting the identified indicators, targets, and targets as well. The one indicator that we have to, we need to have an approved public employment services policy, Employment Services Act, and related regulations and guidelines. And the target there was to have the particular pieces of policy and legislation in place and finalized by cabinet by September 2010. The achievements thus far would be that the Labour Relations Act, the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, Equity Act, amendment bills and the new employment services bill have been approved, have gone through cabinet and are under consideration by NetLink. We also needed to react around the question of capturing job seekers and registering them, as well as the issue of placement. We would want to report that we had said that we were to register 100% of reporting job seekers on our system. The progress thus far is that we out of the 652,000 job seekers that reported, 483 of those were registered. So we measure ourselves at 74% of the target. Something is obscured there, but that talks to the question of opportunities. Referring people to job opportunities as well as the placements, and we have broken this down according to various provinces. The first column is of course the provinces concerned, 9 of them. The second column is job seekers that have reported on our system, and the third column is job seekers that have been registered, and the percentage of that registration and opportunities as well registered. The interesting column is around the issue of placement. I mean the limitations that are there. So the number of people that are registered as per opportunity or opportunities that would arise does not necessarily translate or would not necessarily translate to placement, to the equal number of placements and so on, and I think we should take note of that. So under the period, under review, we had 652,000 job seekers that reported. We captured through our system, the registration system, 483, and that translates to 70% of the 483 registered. There were 39,887 opportunities, but out of those opportunities, we were only able to place 12,801 job seekers. On continuing on our contribution to employment, contribution is talking to the issue of decent employment through inclusive economic growth. We have said that we will need to measure ourselves against the a percentage of registered job seekers in referring them to counseling, guidance, skills development, registered vacancies, workplace opportunities, UI and CF benefits. And we said we wanted to meet 70% of that requirement, particularly referrals within the 30-day period. We hereby report that 65,000 job seekers were provided with career counseling and guidance, 25,000 were referred for work placement opportunities, and we could only place 12,800 as stated earlier on, 451 were referred for UIF benefits, and 8,700 to compensation fund benefits, and 7,000 to Department of Higher Education and Training for further training. 7,000 job seekers were referred for skills development opportunities. Now, the following slide is basically clients that were referred to job opportunities and other services. The first column is career counseling. Those are the statistics totaling to about 65,947 out of We also placed the per province, that's the detail, but in totaling 25,814. The quite a number that we would have to pay attention to as and when we go on, particularly from a policy point of view, is the fact that you also have 451,950 people that were referred for unemployment insurance. You also have the compensation fund, totaling up to 8,732, and skills development, 7,207. Now, we do want to state, Chair, that there is some detail that we want to revisit on this particular slide. Unfortunately, we can't do so, being here and now. For instance, you will see that under housing, there's no detail or statistic on the question of a compensation fund. The same also with, I think, is it Limpopo. Now the problem with figures, they also do tell the story somewhat. In other words, they could translate into something. So we want to follow on this particular matter up. We are not sure whether it's something that relates to also this kind of detail being captured directly with the compensation fund and so forth. But that we would want to be given an opportunity to verify, Chair. On the next slide, we had said that our indicator was the question of the number of companies and workers in distressed sectors having got to be provided with assistance. And that in doing so, our target was to process their applications within 5 working days. 19 companies and 6,183 workers were assisted to the value of about 40.2 million through the training layoff scheme. 15,000 jobs saved in 130 companies through turnaround strategies, particularly in the agriculture, steel and manufacturing sectors, as well as construction and printing. Through our interventions by the CCMA, we were able to save a total of about 9,207 jobs from possible large-scale retrenchments. And through the investments made in the commercial and social investment portfolios by the Unemployment Insurance Fund, having invested 35 billion out of its 52 billion portfolio, we are also able to create or contribute towards the issue of job creation. Continuing on that slide onto the other one, we allocated in the UIF 4.5 million to Productivity South Africa and invested 2 billion of that in private placement bond through the Industrial Development Corporation. 76 transactions with a value of 1.5 billion were approved and expected to create 10,000 jobs and saved about 7,000 permanent UIF paying jobs. As and when the UIF comes in further in terms of its own presentation, you will also receive further detail on this. Now, that's the statistical sort of data and presentation of the training layoff scheme in terms of how it has worked thus far. You have companies that have applied per province, and the number of workers, that's the middle column, the number of workers who stood to benefit or who were beneficiaries of the training layoff scheme, as well as the amount committed. So in total, we had 19 companies, Chair, throughout the country that applied for training of training on the layoff scheme, and then you had 6,183 workers who benefited out of that, and this totaled to 40 million rands. Continuing with our objective one on the contribution to employment creation, we needed to measure ourselves against companies assisted through workplace challenge program to become world class competitive, and we targeted 120 companies. Thus far, we've been able to have 230 companies involved in the workplace challenge to promote productivity, and 105 future forums were also established to facilitate implementation of turnaround strategies. Indicator 6 was the number of SMME managers assisted to manage matters related to intellectual property, and our target was 3,000 SMME managers. We have been able to register 2,707 SMME managers that were trained through our intervention to sustain and grow their enterprises. Now, this slide talks to key challenges and remedial actions that would be required. In other words, what is the experience and how do we reflect on the experience and what it is that we want to do with that particular experience. So the first one is on the question of the Public Employment Services, Employment Services Act, as well as policy and related regulations and guidelines. The bill has been approved and published for comment, and that the process, as I think we indicated earlier on, is still at NEDLAC, and you have other processes of consultation that there are consultations that are taking place. And the action taken is that the minister has taken a stance to intervene to instruct NEDLAC to conclude negotiations on the bill. I think it's safe. Let me just stop there around that question. The percentage, second area is that the percentage of registered job seekers referred to counseling, guidance, skills development, registered vacancies, workplace opportunities, unemployment, insurance, and compensation fund benefits. Placement in registered vacancies and work placement opportunities and the reasons are as tabulated that firstly there is lack of policy and legislation to compel employers to register opportunities with us, and that the second area is that there is lack of integrated systems to trace job seekers referred for placement. Thirdly, allocation of funding for skills development is also insufficient. Inadequate human and IT resources is one of the impediments. Now, in terms of action taken to resolve the problem, we are placing our hopes on the Employment Services Bill, which is still under discussion at NEDLAC. The second area is also that we will need to integrate the services of CIR, which we use with the UIF, with ESSA to the Employment Services South Africa to capture job seekers referred through ESSA when employers declare at UIF. On the number of jobs saved through social plan interventions, we funds were received during the second quarter, and this delayed the implementation process. And in terms of remedial action, it's the future social plan funding have got to be applied for in time. The fourth area is special employment opportunities provided to eligible people with disabilities from all racial groups. One area is that we do not have approved policy and legal framework for service product factories. Second area is that mainstreaming of people with disabilities require collaboration with placement agencies for the open labor market. We are currently, in terms of remedial action that we're taking, we're currently developing a business case, which will include policy. A proposed legal framework is included in the Employment Services Bill that is currently under consideration at NEDLAC. We're also looking at reviewing and improving the current sheltered employment factories marketing strategy. And I think the last point Chair talks to will also dovetail itself with some of the issues that were raised by the observations and findings of the Auditor General. Now, on the key aspects of the Department of Labor Strategic Plan 2010-2011 is addressing ourselves specifically to targets and performance. Objective 2 is about promoting equity in the labor market. The Employment Equity Act and its regulations were the indicators that we needed to adhere to, particularly in terms of amendments. What we can report here is that, you know, that particular bill went through cabinet and is still under NEDLAC. And on the implementation and enforcement, on strengthening the implementation and enforcement mechanisms, we needed to have conducted follow-ups on 60 Johannesburg stock exchange listed companies on the DG reviews by 31st March. With regards to that specific target, 61 copies of DG's final approval letters of affirmative action measures to address income differentials. And on the review and amendment of on the code of good practice on key aspects of HIV and AIDS and employment, by the 31st March 2011, a gap analysis has been conducted. In terms of reference and project plan has also been developed for technical assistance by the International Labour Organization on implementing Recommendation 200 on HIV and AIDS. Continuing with that particular objective, we, in terms of our target, we are to subject 200 companies to DG review by March 2011, 60 of which were Johannesburg Stock Exchange listed, and 140 were to be designated employers. We report that 266 companies were reviewed as follows. 96 of those were JSE listed companies, of which 87 were served with recommendations. 170 were designated companies that were reviewed. 156 of the 170 were served with recommendations. And a total of 9,468 employment equity procedural inspections conducted, and 7,449 of the 9,400 A total of 9,468 were Employment Equity Act procedural inspections, Chair, that were conducted. And we achieved a compliance rate of 79%. I want to verify the 7,449 as to what it talks to, but the 79% is the compliance rate. On the DG reviews, that's the breakdown in terms of the companies per province, designated employers, and JSE companies. Now, in total, you have 60 JSE companies across the country that were reviewed, and you have 176 designated employers that were also, those were targets, I'm sorry, Chair. And the middle column talks to the actual companies reviewed. So we targeted ourselves for 60, for JSCA companies for review, but we reviewed 96. And on the designated companies, employers, sorry, we had targeted ourselves 176 companies, but we did 170 of those. Now, of the 96 that we reviewed, 87 were served with recommendations. And of the 170 designated employers, 156 were served with recommendations. Protecting vulnerable workers is objective 3. The objective here is to amend the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, and that's what we had targeted for ourselves, popularly publishing it for public comment. Currently, it is under discussion at NEDLAC. Item 2 was to deal with the wage investigating wage differentials, and we had to in fulfilling this, we had to amend the norms and benchmarks for proportionate income differentials. A report had been interrogated and signed off by the Employment Conditions Commission. And on reviewing the existing sectoral determination, and we had targeted farm workers, domestic workers, wholesale, retail, hospitality, civil engineering, learnership, private security, and forestry. All investigations envisaged for review, the amendment or sectoral determinations were completed. Extended public works programs determination and code of good practice was also published. The small business determination has been referred to NEDLAC for consideration by social partners. On strengthening civil society, our target was to fund the work of a civil society organizations involved in the world of work. The last column details that we, out of the target of 8, we could only do 7. We only did 7, sorry. And therefore we give a tabulation of the civil society organizations, DITSELA, COSATU, SOCOTU, South African Labour Bulletin, CRADOC, Advice Office, COLAQUE, Advice Office, and Workers' College in KZN. We, of the 200,000 workplaces inspected for compliance to ensure 80% compliance to labor legislation, and we had said we wanted to conduct 200,000 inspections as per the breakdown. Progress is such that we did 192,000 workplaces that were inspected and audited. 378 of these were conducted in high-risk sectors to enforce compliance with the WASH Act. 147,000 is the number of companies that complied, which translates to 77%. Now, this slide, the chairperson talks to companies, workplaces that have been inspected per province and the total number across the country. The first column talks to the inspections conducted, the number of companies that are complying and level of compliance percentage wise, and of course the fifth column talks to the notices that were issued out of the companies or inspections that have been conducted. And the notices issued, that column should also be packed together with week with about five other columns. In other words, it breaks down. Just to give you an example, in Gauteng, we issued 4,998 notices. But of the 4,998 notices, 2,207 were undertakings. Of the 4,998, 280 of those were compliance orders. Of the 4,998, 1,723 were contraventions. Of the 4,998, 182 were improvements. Of the 4,998, 136 were prohibition orders that were issued. So, in other words, notices issued should also be lumped together with a further breakdown as per the slide there. It's just that we had no way of indicating it. Maybe the ideal way was to actually have it completely sort of highlighted so that it would capture that kind of sense. Objective 3 on the protection of vulnerable workers, we had said that we needed to ensure that 80% of SMMEs are compliant through advocacy campaigns, and we targeted that we needed to have seminars in the iron, steel, hospitality, forestry, and construction. But also in doing so, we needed to train shop stewards in the targeted sectors. We hereby report that in the iron and steel sectors, we held the seminar in Port Elizabeth, and we had 176 attendees. In the forestry sector, we had it in Maritzburg, and 96 attendees participated. In the construction sector, we held the seminar in Gauteng, and 365 attendees participated. So in total, we also in training of shop stewards, we trained 1,021 shop stewards on Employment Equity Act, on Occupational Health and Safety Act, on the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. On indicator 7, we're to investigate complaints and settle within 90 days of receipt. And the indicator stands at 80% of the investigated complaints having got to be settled, and we hereby report that we stand at about 75% of that particular indicator. 120,000 from a total of 154 complaints received were investigated, and 116 were settled within 90 days. That's a tabulation on complaints and investigations per province. The first column is the total number of complaints received by center service officers and inspectors, and the total number of complaints investigated, as well as the total number of complaints settled within 90 days, and the level of compliance with what we had targeted for ourselves, but also monies that have been recovered as a result of these interventions. The one area, Chair, that we would want to point out also up front on this slide is that there's something wrong with Northwest, and we would want to follow that one up, because everybody else has recovered except Northwest. So there's a matter that we would want to follow up with them as a province in terms of clarifying the particular figures there. Because that does not it doesn't target, because they also made interventions in terms of, you know, settling complaints. So we need to clarify this with them. So in our review, we stand at about 75% in compliance towards our 80% target, and that translates to 15.8 million of recoveries. On indicator 8 on promotion of the level of knowledge of occupational health and safety to employers and workers in the agricultural sector, our target was to implement the pilot project in Limpopo and Mpumalanga. We hereby report that the concept of roving safety representative inspectors was launched in Limpopo and Mpumalanga and is now ready to be rolled out in other provinces. On indicator 9, reduction of the prevalence of silicosis in the non-mining industry. And we also targeted to ourselves to conduct the baseline to determine the prevalence of silica exposure in non-mining industry. A baseline study on silicosis was conducted and report in this regard is available. The extent of exposure to silica dust for 200 companies operating around an SPR sample has been established. 49 companies were assisted during inspections in developing a program for the control of exposure to silica dust. 208 companies were inspected with regard to silica exposure and 54 complied, which resulted in 26% compliance level. On the key aspects of our strategic plan, as we continue, particularly talking to outcome 4, is there a complaint here about not seeing a design or something? No? Oh, okay. Sorry. No, thanks, Chair. Now, the first indicator on the development and submission of the briefing documents in time and showing the compliance with the International Labour Organization constitutional requirements in terms of Article 19 and 22 of the Constitution of the ILO. We had said that we will want to ensure participation in the ILO governing body and ILC, and that we needed to develop briefing documents in time, ensure compliance with the ILO's constitutional requirements and so on. We have participated in the 300th session of the ILO governing body. A process commenced regarding the finalization of the reports under Article 22 of the ILO Constitution. You can say it. So it's not there. Can I have the chair for this, and then ask that we will try and make arrangements for, I think it's about, probably I'm missing about, no, not one page. I think you're missing about 2 or 3 pages.
Where is that we get these copies with the new content?
I'll stop. Let's ask for copies to be organized there. Is that what you're asking, Chet?
Yes. We'll continue with the presentation.
Oh, and then I'll send later. Okay. Thanks, Chet. The review on the implementation of the Memorandum of Understanding with Zimbabwe, Namibia, Lesotho, and Mozambique. Lesotho was to initiate discussions regarding the renewal of the Memorandum of Understanding signed during 2006. Lesotho has undertaken to resend the letter addressed to the acting DG to restart the negotiations on the MOU on labor and employment. The third area was for us to participate and contribute in the programs and activities of the AU Labour and Social Affairs Commission and African Regional Labour Administration Centre. In this regard, we had prepared briefing notes and positions prepared for participation in Cameroon, attended and participated in the February 2011 ALAC governing the council meeting in Zambia. We attended and participated at SADC employment labor sector meeting in Namibia in March 2011. We had targeted ourselves on the SADC as chairperson for employment and labor sector to hold the secretariat accountable in terms of resolutions adopted at the meeting held in Cape Town in 2009 to ensure smooth handover of the chair to Mozambique. The department, after successfully chairing the SADC, the employment and labor sector, handed over chairmanship to Mozambique during the April 2010 SADC labor ministers meeting. Chair, further on the issue of key challenges and remedial actions, the reason why, amongst others, the 200,000 workplaces inspected for compliance, we could not meet the required target there, is precisely because we have the participation of the inspectors in the public service strike, as well as that also combined with inadequate number of human resources. We have, in this regard, reviewed our targets in accordance with the resources available. We are also in the process of conducting an organization development study to determine appropriate numbers and competencies. On the professionalization of the inspectorate, which it has not been finalized. Thus far, what we have been able to do is developing job profiles that we are reviewing to implement the first phase of professionalization. So, on the reduction of hearing, reduction of noise induced hearing loss by 5% as a target, we were unable to meet this particular target precisely because of some delays that we had also experienced insofar as the procurement is concerned. But we're also happy to report that the departmental bid adjudication committee has approved and has started engaging around this particular process. So we'll see some progress on this issue being registered in the very near future. On objective 8, on monitoring the impact of legislation, we had said that we will produce 4 quarterly labor market trends reports based on the UIF Labor Force Service Employment System South Africa and submitted to the Minister as well as the Director General. We report that the Industrial Action Report and Annual Labor Market Reports were produced. The UIF Client Satisfaction Survey and Non-Compliance Studies in the taxi, domestic sector and catering industries have been conducted. The collection and job opportunity and unemployment in the South African labor market has also been produced. The client satisfaction survey for medical doctors was also conducted and reported. We had said that we were
Yeah, no, that slide, the chair continues. The pilot study was submitted, the comments were made on the report and forwarded back to the researchers. The second draft report was submitted, and upon circulation, comments would be made for consideration by the service provider. Yes, that slide talks to the very same slide that we spoken about earlier on. On strengthening the institutional capacity of the department, the indicator was that 90%, we needed to comply 90% with the AG recommendations. But our target was 100% compliance with the Auditor General. What we can say at this stage is that what has been announced in this meeting, the question of receiving an unqualified audit opinion, all we can say is that we hope we should be in a position to sustain that kind of achievement, as we believe that this actually should not be the exception, it should be the norm, and I think that's what is generally expected of all of us. On the second indicator, 90% of all funded posts filled within 6 months, and our target was the percentage of all funded posts filled within a specified period of time. At the end of March 2011, 91% of posts were filled against a target of 90%, and our vacancy rate stands at 8.5%. 40% of women, 50% of youth employed at most levels, 5% people with disabilities employed. The percentage, that's our target, spoke to the percentage of women, youth, and people with disability employed in line with employment equity plan. We have almost 35% achievement on women at senior management level against a target of 40%. Young people stand at about 43% against the target of 50%. On the people with disabilities, we stand at almost 3%, which in itself is it's a bit of an achievement above, as compared to the threshold at the public service, which stands at 2%. But our own goal as a department was to employ people with disabilities within the department at a level of about 5%, but we're 2% below that. The question of complaints having got to be attended to within 14 days of receipt, and we had said we need, our target would be 90 days, 90% was to, of those cases would have had to be attended to within 14 days. We rated the third best among departments in resolving calls logged through the presidential hotline. As at March 2011, we got over 4,742 calls received and 4,677 were resolved. That's a 98% kind of progress on that. On the indicator that speaks to the number of service delivery points accessible in line with geographic norms and standards, we had said that we needed to develop geographic norms and standards as well as an implementation plan. Currently, we're undertaking a spatial mapping of labor centers to ensure accessibility to clients in line with outcome 12, which talks to service quality and access, and that work is in progress. May we also just state, Chair, that this particular point is is also linked to the work that we are doing relating to our visits across provinces and so on, and we feel that there would be a need to conduct an organizational review exercise. Therefore, the question of where your resources are to be placed and how they have to be utilized have got to be part of that overall exercise on the organizational review. On the budget allocations and utilization, our budget currently stands at 1.8 billion. And our actual expenditure stands at 1.826 billion, and we have a balance of about 9.5 billion, and that translates to a 0.5% balance, which we think something is what? Oh, okay. Are you sure that it's the laptop that has a problem? Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure that it's me that was creating a problem. I'm sorry, Jim. By the way, Chair, I was just saying our variance insofar as the spending pattern is concerned stands at about 0.5%, which is quite good. Quite good, thanks. Now that slide talks to the actual, a breakdown of how our budget is made up and is made of. The last few slides on the key aspects as well, I think we've spoken about the contribution to employment creation, we've spoken about the promotion of equity and whatever, we've spoken about the protection of vulnerable workers, we've spoken about social protection, which is basically our work through the unemployment insurance as well as the compensation fund. And so on, we've spoken about the promotion of, I think, yes, indirectly, so the question of promotion of sound labor relations. The question of strengthening multilateral and bilateral relations, we've also spoken about that in terms of our work at the ILO, our work at various institutions. The strengthening of the capacity of labor market institutions, we have also spoken about that, and strengthening the institutional capacity of what we have done. The last slide, the chairperson talks to the question of what it is that we could actually expect from the portfolio committee. There are just basically three things. The first one is that we would always look forward to the portfolio committee to provide support in advocating the programs and feedback of how they view our work, particularly in the field of service delivery. The second area is that we would also like the portfolio committee to continue participating and supporting the department's international relations work and study visits. And of course, we want to qualify this one, Chair. It doesn't mean that because we ask the portfolio committee to support us in this kind of work, that will pay for them. Parliament will always pay for the portfolio committee. Thirdly, is that there is a trend that has developed for the Chair to participate in the campaigns like these and these and marketing interventions of the department, and we welcome that and would like to encourage that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, TG. There are just some few things that I'm unable to understand them, I'm finding it difficult to understand them. The training layoff schemes, the first state, there's nothing. Limpopo, nothing. Northern Cape, nothing happened. I wonder. stock exchange companies that were 54 in the Free State. That the Free State is Johannesburg, is Gauteng, and the others in Limpopo. So I think that information we need to, as you said earlier, we need to verify that and change the figures, because I don't believe that the Free State will have so many companies in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Honorable members, the floor is open for questions and engagement. Honorable Makubele Machel. Honorable Wadi. Honorable Khanar. In that order.
Thanks, Chairperson. It's reflected by the Auditor General that senior management of the department or DDGs did not comply with the performance, with the review of the performance plans and their appraisals. It's only the senior management, meaning your chief directors and your DDG, that did not do their performance. They did not review their performance, and they were not, hence they were not, they did not even do their appraisals. I want to know what was the reasons for senior management not to comply with the public sector administration requisite.
Honorable Khanan.
No, on slide 7. I just wanted to know what are the difficulties making it difficult for placement to be at that level when opportunities are about 39,000. And on slide 20, I want to link the slide 20 under point 4, civil society strengthened. I think you were able to refer to the annual report, page 64. Funding of civil society, and I think these are linked. Page 64 of the annual report, and that part is linked. And if you look into at page 97 of the annual report, under strengthening civil society, 4.2. I can see the amount. I would like that particular amount to be at least broken down so that I can be able to say how much went to which of these. And whether you, is it a department which identify this civil society organization, or these civil society organizations are the one which approach the department so that the department can be able to finance them. And the under page 18, I think it's the page 18 of the annual report. And that you have got transfers under households, leave gratuity. This amount there which has been transferred for that particular purpose. Under which conditions do you have to pay people for leave gratuity? Are you not supposed to take their leave instead of cashing? on the news. And then we go to page 25 of the annual report. Under vetting strategy adopted by Mamacha, we talk about vetting strategy. And as I said, the problem was that we didn't know the funds to be able to establish
the structure would be necessary to do the vetting. What I wanted to check is for this presently, do you have funds to be able to proceed with implementing this? And taking you to page 28, under Department EE Plan Implemented and Monitored, you say the reason why the there is a problem of you achieving the employment of youth is because the target of 50% was unrealistic. Who actually set that particular target, if it's unrealistic? And on page 75, I'm sorry, I'll deal with 75 and 76. Can you tell me more about under compliance with laws and regulations, point 13? There's quite a lot which has been said by the Auditor General there. And, in terms of what they say has not been done. And that actually deal with point 18 under page 76, under leadership. Can you just explain the two? And lastly, page 97, I've dealt with it when I dealt with slide 20. That's all, Chair.
Alice, Honorable.
Thank you, Honorable Acting Chairperson. If I could start with the Auditor General's report. It seems like an obvious question, but right at the beginning you say that you need, in order to do a job, identifying stakeholder needs. I mean, that sounds obvious, but who does the Auditor General consider to be their stakeholders? I'm asking a question about spheres of government and departments and all that jazz. Are your stakeholders Parliament or the Department of Labour or the Auditor General Head Office? Who are those stakeholders? If you could just clarify for me, it will just help me a little bit. And then in your report you talk about the Department of Labour's report going from qualified to unqualified, and a lot of that had to do with the assets of the PBP with Siemens, the computers and all that. Now, of course, the assets have been sorted out. We have a proper register now, and we know where the computers are and who they belong to and all that kind of thing. But there's no comment that I can find here on the actual contract. So in other words, we fixed the asset problem. We know where the computers are now and who they belong to. But is the Auditor General happy that that contract is still running correctly, playing according to the rules? Is there no wasteful expenditure in that PPP contract? Because to my knowledge, there is wasteful expenditure that has happened in that contract, and the Auditor General makes no comment on that, which I find quite surprising in this annual report. You say, ma'am, that the staff of the compensation fund have been found to be working for other employers, which sounds to be moonlighting, or is it during office hours or whatever. Is this a prolific problem? Is it just two people, or is it 5,000 people? How big is that problem? Obviously it's something you're aware of and that's being dealt with, but can you just give us an idea of how big this problem is? Is it everybody under the commissioner, or is it just two people? Because then we'll understand whether we should panic or not really worry, because it's not a big material issue. And then finally to you, ma'am, you say intervention is required in a compensation fund. Could you just give us
two points of what kind of intervention you think would be helpful, and then the CCMA, you give an unqualified audit, but you say that the things that caused most of the problems in the past were around funding and getting the funding in time to you know, pay the bills. Do you believe that that is now not a problem anymore, that the funding of the CCMA is sorted out? I know there was a massive retrenchment during the economic downturn, so that obviously affected the funding, but if you could just indicate if you're happy with that. If I can then just go to the DG's report on the Department of Labour. I'm not going to comment on page 9 about those zeros. Obviously the DG is aware of them and is investigating, so I think I can just leave that until we get some clarity later. The training layoff scheme, about 40 million was used, DG, and I know this is perhaps before your time, so I don't know whether Mr. Mkonto and Mr. Sarue would like to perhaps answer the question or assist you, but 40 million was used. How much is available? I just want to know, is 40 million most of the money or just a very small amount? I have the impression from the previous year's financial report that it was a large amount of money that was made available, like a billion or something. And I don't know what the figure is, and the report doesn't tell us 40 million out of how much. Have we still got a lot of money to use, or is it all spent? That's what I'm trying just to establish. And then, just for clarity, on page 23, you say that money is recovered from investigation of complaints. The investigations I understood here were on workplaces, you know, people being perhaps abused in their workplace, or the correct equipment was not available to protect staff or whatever, but maybe I misunderstand what those inspections were, because I'm not sure why money is recovered. If it's it's abuse of individuals, then obviously it's companies that are not providing the safety equipment, they're not keeping to working hours, they're not keeping to labour standards. I'm not sure how you recover money from that, but you know, obviously it's just something I don't understand. I'm almost done, I'm just flipping quickly through these last pages. I think that's it for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DJ. I think just responding to the question that has been raised by Honorable Hana with regards to placement, the challenges in placement. Whilst we do understand that currently there's no policy, that's why there's a bill in NEDLAC in relation to public employment services. But I think the if possible, would you indicate that in areas where you were successful in placement, yes, because there are numbers here, do those numbers include private and public service? Does public service also use the initiative that you have put in place as a department? But now it's your turn to respond to questions that have been raised.
No.
Oh, I know that Honorable always forgot one question. Honorable Ollis.
It will save a second round if I just make my last question now. I just remembered I missed the one question. The DG's report says that the minister instructed NEDLAC to finish their negotiations on the labour laws. And I have a question about that word instruct. To my knowledge, the minister can't instruct NEDLAC to start or finish a particular negotiation process because they must agree details. I'm not sure that that's appropriate for the minister to instruct NEDLAC to finish negotiating laws. Is that correct? Did I understand that correctly?
DG?
No, thank you very much, Chair. Let me start off by saying that I would also ask the DGs responsible to also come into some of the issues. But I would want to deal with some few of these particular matters. There is the question about the 54 JSE companies in the Free State. Indeed, we'll go back, try and verify this thing, because I think, Mr. Fernandez, it's not possible that in the Free State you could have 54. Yes, but I'm also informed that, you know, that number is also influenced by subsidiaries. So as a result, you may have done two companies, but those two major companies are national companies and they have subsidiaries and so on, and therefore that balloons the number in a way. But having said so, we'd want to go back and verify some of the detail around those issues. On the question, and I'll ask Mr. Morotoba to deal with the question of the layoff, the training layoff schemes and so on, and combined, I think there were two questions that were asked about it. But on the question of the performance appraisals, it's true that this was identified as a problem, but it's also related to a number of institutional issues that were there at the time. And our intervention was to ask for advice from the Public Service Commission to assist us, because, for instance, you know, we discovered that for a period of about 2 to 3 sort of years, and you know, performance appraisals have not been done and so on. So there's a particular procedure that they then advised that we would have to follow as the Department of Labor, but then make sure that as from this point onwards we stick to the question of the managing performance and assessing that performance. Now, I think the question on around job placements, there are limitations. The limitations, Mr. Hanare, it's a variety of you could have a variety of influencing kind of reasons. You could have, for an example, people that come into our system to register as job seekers, let's say 10,000. But then your job market there is only able to absorb, let's say, 10 or even 0. For that matter. So factors such as that, your macroeconomic dynamics at a local level, they also are an influencing kind of factor, really. The other one, of course, is that not only do we just simply register, there is also the question of that in the process of registering, you also have got to create a profile and match that profile against what an industry or industries are looking for out there. So which means possibly out of 5 people who would be walking into a labor center to register as job seekers, you may find that perhaps, you know, relatively successfully you have something like 2 CVs that can be matched against a job opportunity somewhere and so on. So those are some of the limitations on that. On the funding around civil society organizations, the breakdown of that funding, we will try and assist to provide some detail in terms of how these organizations are funded. But these organizations are the ones that approach the Department of Labor and apply for this kind of funding. So we don't go to them per se. So on on the triple P, I'm just being skimpy around some of the questions. I'm not following necessarily a particular sort of order. On the triple P, firstly, the contract itself is terminating by November 2012. So it is a valid contract, it's still there. When we came in, we found that KPMG had done a report and an analysis of that particular situation. But we also constituted a particular task team internally to look at the overall situation around the triple P contract and so on. And it came out, that report came up with a number of problems that it identified. It also made recommendations in that regard. You had problems, a set of problems that related to issues of governance, to issues of systems and so on and so it goes. And then one of the recommendations was to look at ways and means of how do we then manage the phase out of the existing contract towards a new contract on the triple P. And one of those was that we needed to go the route of also finding an external service provider to manage the phase out in the meantime, but also assist the Department of Labor in shaping the question of what the future IT contract would have to basically eventually sort of look like and so on. Now, the long and short of it now is that we started engaging with the South African Revenue Service to look at ways and means of interventions that would have to be made on immediate basis, but also assisting us into the future. And I may want to say that, let me just say that I think the engagements and the discussions at the level of the Department of Labor and SARS around the question of the triple P contract, and not only just the triple P, but how do we manage the phase out, they are progressing very well. There are positive developments that are beginning to emerge at that level. I wouldn't want Chair to deal with, there are a number of issues, as a matter of detail, that deal with the question of whether there were overpayments or underpayments and whatever affecting the Siemens, the triple P contract and so on. We are of the view that as and when we manage the phase out between now and November, a number of these issues are going to come to the fore. And I think we would then be better equipped to deal with them and even reflect on them and propose as to how we would want to deal with them. But that's where we stand around the issue of the triple P contract and so on, and the issue related to. I think Mr. Ollis, you are the one that said there was a lot of wastage and so forth. And so, I mean, one of the things identified were issues of contract management. Simply, and I think also the AG does pick up on that, on the issue of our own weaknesses insofar as contract management is concerned. And those are some of the matters that moving forward we would have to, we are beginning to deal with. Could I then ask a... Could I then ask the DDGs to also deal with some of the questions that I'm not sure, Mr. Kettle, that's whether you want to deal with the breakdown around funding, but I thought that has been dealt with. CFO, you may want to deal with the late leave graduate, yes.
On the breakdown, we hope to have it available soon, but the bulk of the funding is going to Tixela, which is the Patronin Education Institute, and to the three federations. they take the bulk of the funding, and then the other smaller, like the labor bulletin, the credit advice office. But we'll give you the specific numbers as soon as we have them available, hopefully even during the course of this meeting.
On leave gratuity, when the official is transferred from one department to the other, he's transferred with the leave days credit that he has accumulated. However, it's a different issue when he terminates his services from the public service, either voluntarily when he's getting out of public service, or in case of death. At that point, we calculate the leave that due and we pay them out. That's what is called leave gratuity.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Just on the just to add on what the DG said, challenges experienced with regard to placement is that there is also a problem of mismatch between what employers would normally want and the skills levels of the people that we would normally have on the database. So, and the majority of registered candidates would also be people who still require levels of training, which is why we have a high number of referrals also to education for skills development purposes. As for the usage of the system, the majority of departments use DPSA, and we have had discussions with DPSA, and during the course of this financial year, we have seen an increase in the usage of the system. To give an example, Stats SA, in the large recruitment drive of the numerators, they use the database, and the Department of Health in the recruitment of nurses, they use the system to recruit in the region of 4,500 candidates for nursing new entrants. On the training layoff, the reasons why other provinces did not feature is not because there were no retrenchment in those areas. There were retrenchment. However, the issue here is that either the companies in those provinces, together with the trade unions concerned, did not reach an agreement, or they did not meet the criteria as set out on the training layoff scheme to be able to access the necessary funding. And in most cases, we have met with those companies through the intervention of the CCMA Productivity SA to explain the rules and so on. And we also amended the rules to make sure that the eligibility is extended. If I can just go back to remind honorable members that the original intervention was aimed at assisting companies in distress due to economic recession. But we have had very good, compelling cases. For instance, when the World Cup ended, there were a lot of workers who were working on the major construction projects that had nothing to do with recession, but those projects came to an end. And in the agricultural sector, because of climate reasons and so on, there are also large number of workers that get affected, and especially areas such as Daum where they had floods and all that. So the rules were changed and adjusted accordingly to be able to pick up on those workers. On the expenditure side, we had 400 million spent. Honorable members will recall that the combined or total amount was in the region of 2.4 billion, 1.4 from the NSF and 1.4 from the UI. So the remainder of the money is to be spent in line with the adjusted rules. And those funds have been, although not put in a pot, they are being held in the separate accounts of UIF and NSF respectively, but they are still ring-fenced for this project in line with the adjusted rules. And we are hoping to see a number of new companies that are affected in line with the adjusted rules to be assisted. And we are also seriously discussing the possible impact of the recession, as we begin to see signs in the European Union and other countries in the West, that we need to be better prepared this time around. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. The question around monies recovered. These complaints or investigation are labor-related complaints. And when inspectors do conduct inspections, there are issues around sectoral determination which sets minimum wages. Now, if the worker is paid below the minimum wage, obviously there is an outstanding money which is due to the worker that needs to paid out. There are issues also of a leave, where there's termination of employment, where there is leave due and notice pay that should have been. So those are the monies around that. Thanks.
The honorable elected chair has just came in, but I think there's one question that came to mind to me which has not yet been responded to. The issue of the minister's involvement in the NEDLAC processes, some kind of instructions, I think that question was raised by Honorable Hollis. And I think after that response, before members can identify which questions they have raised that have not been responded to, we would like also to give the opportunity to the AG, because there were questions and that were directed to AG, and there were also references, some questions, even if they were directed to the department, but there were references to what the AG has reported. And then thereafter, obviously, the honorable elected chair will take over. Is he back?
Oh.
Honorable acting chair and the duly elected chairperson of the committee. As you will recall, the bills were released on the 17th of December last year and published in the Government Gazette and referred to NEDLAC. On the 20th of January to commence consultations and negotiations on the bills, and we are now in October. The legislative program that we had envisaged was to bring the bills to Parliament by the end of this year, and the simple thing that the Minister has done is to request the NEDLAC social partners to speed up the process so that we can meet the legislative program that we had envisaged. So the minister has the right to request the parties, at the same time respecting the social dialogue processes and the social partnership arrangements and the processes of mandating and reporting back, but requesting the social partners to speed up the process so that we can meet the legislative program. So it is in that context that the minister had met with the social partners and asked them to, where possible, speed up the process so that we can meet the legislative program and bring those bills to Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. If you will allow me, I'll answer a few questions and hand over to Daisy. A question was asked on who the stakeholders of the AGSA are. The HSA reports to Parliament, so we regard Parliament as our stakeholder. We audit our auditees, the department, and the entities. We engage with them in terms of addressing the findings that we raised. They have a mandate to carry out certain objectives and spend funds. We also regard them as our stakeholders. Parliament is our primary stakeholder, if I can say that. The unqualified report on the other stage will give more detail on that with regard to the wasteful expenditure. And if I may, in terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, when we audit fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we need to be in a position to prove that an amount that was spent resulted in fruitless and wasteful expenditure. As far as I know, there is an investigation in establishing the, if any, the exact amount of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And with regard to contract management, there are issues that we have raised, as I've said. They will give the detail of that. With regards to the CCMA funding, the attention that we've drawn in the audit report related to the 2011 financial year, as far as the current financial year is concerned, I believe the CCMA will be in a position to respond to that. We haven't done a review of their funding, whether it is sufficient. So they should be, the CCMA should be in a position to respond to the question. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the PPP contract, we have raised an issue under compliance with laws and regulations around the contract management in terms of how it was monitored. And under governance, we have raised an issue as to the business continuity on the IT environment, and then the other issues Mace has already alluded to, as well as the DG. Regarding the issue on people being remunerated outside the public service, this was basically in the regions. It was identified in the regions. And it's not really such a big problem. However, we just wanted to highlight it to management that it can get out of control. So that's something that they need to look into. With regard to the intervention that is required relating to compensation fund, if we look at the qualification on compensation fund, the qualification is basically on revenue and receivables regarding assessment claims. And our issue there is that if the intervention required is capacitating and skilling the fund to ensure that they can deal with ensuring that they when they report on revenue and receivables, it's complete and it's accurate, and the violation assertion is addressed as well. Thanks.
Thank you. From members who have asked questions, are there any questions that were not responded to? But not the way you wanted the questions to be responded to, but questions that were not responded to. And thereafter, Honorable Chairperson will take over.
The objective of asking questions is to get answers. Not the way I want them, but real answers. I asked questions about VAT strategy on page 25. I asked questions on the targeting of the youth in terms of who decided on page 28, and I asked questions on the 2 points, point 13 and 18, on as far as comments made by the Auditor General in terms of the issues raised by the Auditor General, whether the department have addressed those particular issues and how have they addressed them.
Chair, on the two issues. I think on the vetting, we do have. I think one question was, do we have funds now? So we do have funds available to deal with the issue of vetting. We do have funds to deal. No, on the question of the youth, you asked us as to who decided. We did. Yes, we did, in terms of setting the youth target, 50% and so on. I think that expression in the report that says it may be, it's more of a reflection that perhaps we may have been over ambitious to think that we'll employ 50% of our workforce will be young people. It is just simply a reflection, but that target stands because it's actually there. So it's ourselves who adopted that particular position. So. No, I'm just holding it off there for now. I'm not sure what I'm understanding the third area of your question about. I'm not so certain. Maybe if you could also, just come back with it. Okay. No, I think you were talking about page 76, 75 and 76. I think you spoke about the comments made by the Auditor General. I think item 13 on that page is around issues of compliance and non-compliance with procurement and contract management. I think in a way we have touched on the issue of contract management. We acknowledge that the issue of contract management is quite a big matter within the department. And we are beginning also to look into it. And our entry point at this stage is around the specifically the issue of the PPP contract, which I think is also an item. I think on this is also dealt with on item 18, because also they say that the accounting officer did not effectively exercise oversight responsibility regarding compliance with laws and regulations, which means we have got to do the opposite of that. We have got to ensure, the accounting officer has got to ensure the compliance with laws and regulations and related internal controls relating to asset management, procurement processes, reporting on PPP agreements, reporting on predetermined objectives, and so on. So we also do acknowledge that point, but I'm saying in some of the responses that we have provided, the issue of contract management, we have reflected on it. The issue of the current PPP contract, we have also reflected on it and acknowledged that there are issues that we must begin to tie down in there. So essentially also the process that involves ourselves as a department and SARS is also a response to some of the issues that have been identified here.
I can't act forever. You must elect me if you want me to be the chair forever. Jefferson, now they must ask follow-up questions and other things through you now, not through me.
Thank you very much. I forgot to welcome new members in this family. We've got Mr. Alistair Smith that I met at the ILO some days ago. Welcome to this great family. And Melerato Mulevazi too, who's the new DDG Corporate Services. Lentatem Kize, who is now the advisor to the minister. Welcome to the great family. One is related to the investigation within Tela. I want to know what are the outcomes of the investigation and what steps have been taken against those the employees who are implicated in this. This is very important to the committee. What action is taken to correct this, to ensure that this kind of thing doesn't happen? Because the impression I get is that there are people who are implicated who are still within the department, who haven't left within Tela to the Department of Education. The other is on memorandums of understanding with Zimbabwe and Namibia. What do these memorandums of understanding entail? And what did we as South Africa gain during the period when we chaired the SADC ELF? Are there other further questions that members would like to ask, or follow-up questions on the... Dira Zahai, Honorable Hana.
It's not really a follow-up question. I just want to, because every time we talk about this contract management, the DG talks about the PPP. I'm not interested in the PPP. Mr. Odis is the one interested in the PPP. My concern was that what is being raised by the Auditor General is really the issue of non-disclosure by potential employees of the department accessing, to simplify, business, doing business with the department, or their friends or family doing business with the department. That's where I come in. That was the issue. And I'm not saying you should respond. I'm just clarifying. That's where I was discussing it. You kept on going on to this Siemens issue.
Are there further questions from members? Okay, over to you, DG.
No, thanks. Thanks, Chair. I'm not so certain that I will be able to respond to the first question around the Inlela investigations. I have not cited that report, which is with the Department of Higher Education and Training. In fact, I had also not received feedback from them at the time when at some point we requested that we also be forwarded with such a copy. But I may want, I'm not sure Mr. Morotoba or any one of you has any clarity on this matter, because I will not be able to assist in this regard at this stage. I would also ask that on the MOUs with Zimbabwe and Namibia, that Mr. Kettle does respond to that question. And maybe also the third question. I'm not sure how comprehensive you may want this, because I think it would have been good if it was in a form of an assessment, the question of what did we gain in chairing, for an example, the SADC ELSE and so on. It would have been good if it was in a form of a comprehensive report that analyzes our work there and what the experiences they would have been. But probably, I think, Mr. Kalidas would be able to shed some light on briefly what the experiences have been like.
thanks a lot, Honorable Chairperson. I think maybe just to explain the investigation in context at Indela. Firstly, the investigation around the procurement was instituted after the transfer. Now, everybody who worked at the institution, the whole institution, including all the staff members, were transferred and they are currently working in the DHET. So the issues that they were looking at was the procurement processes that were followed in the institution, because the institution had delegated powers like provinces of the department and so on. Now, what it boils down to, Honorable Chairperson, at the end was their findings on one hand and charging the respective people that are currently working at DHET, and to my knowledge up to now is only one person, and the only assistance that they required from DOL was in explaining the procurement procedures and the policies as they exist, because the findings are against one person, and to my knowledge up to now that the only one person has been dismissed, and the person is in the process of appealing, and the rest of the people involved have not been charged, because the charges against them could just not be I think they just could not formulate proper charges based on the investigation. So the only assistance required from DOL up to now is around, you know, like during the disciplinary hearings, the evidence. As for the report, the issue was for DOL to respond comprehensively and on some of the findings, which education itself in some cases could not formulate charges around. Thanks.
So there were no people implicated who are in the department in DOL? Okay, no thanks.
Chairperson, just on the memoranda of understanding with Zimbabwe, the memoranda of understanding with Zimbabwe covers a number of issues, including how to regularize the status of migrant workers, particularly in the Limpopo province where they are working on the farms, the establishment of the Bite Bridge Labor Migration Center, social security. There was also a task force established on asbestos in the context of that memorandum of understanding, and areas of cooperation around occupational health and safety, labor law reform, dispute resolution and social dialogue, and skills development and employment services. Now, the agreement was going to be revised, but before we take that process forward, there are consultations currently taking place with the Department of Home Affairs and Department of International Relations and Cooperation, as all the MOUs need to be aligned with the new immigration legislation. So that is on the issue of Zimbabwe. Similarly, with Namibia, we have an MOU that also deal with most of the same issues that we have dealt with Zimbabwe, the issue of social dialogue, dispute resolution mechanisms, productivity, labor inspections and employment services, international relations and employment equity, as well as labor law reform. And as you know, they've also had reform to their legislation also to deal with what they call labor hire, which is the equivalent of labor brokers in South Africa. We have recently been approached by the ministry there to continue or to reopen discussions again on the MOU and what we would be doing. They have had exchange visits or study visits to South Africa, where they looked at how the department functions. They also looked at the dispute resolution and social dialogue in this country. So we are awaiting an approach from them to take the process forward. When we chaired SADC, of course, there is a detailed report available of the SADC Employment and Labour Sector meeting, which was held in Cape Town in 2009. And when you host a meeting of this kind, you assume the chairpersonship for the following year until the next meeting, which had taken place in Mozambique last year. So what happens in between the period is that there are technical committees and subcommittees established of the employment and labor sector that deal with, on the one hand, employment and labor issues, and on the other hand, social security issues. So our role as chairperson at the time was then to ensure that those subcommittees and technical committees meet to give effect to the decisions of the 2009 meeting, so that a report can then go to the next ensuing meeting, which happened in Mozambique in April 2010. And at that meeting, we then handed over the chairpersonship of the sector to Mozambique, and we ensured that on the agenda of the Mozambique meeting that there are reports from the technical and subcommittees that function in between the meetings of the employment and labor sector. So that is the role that we played, and of course it is always an honor for a country to host an event of this nature. But also to take the responsibility to ensure that the decisions of the meeting at which you are chairperson, that those decisions are implemented so that the sector can show progress by its next meeting. But as I said, there is also a detailed report available of the meeting at that point. Also, as Mozambique this year had handed over the chairpersonship to Namibia in March this year, there's also a report of the Namibian meeting of the employment and labor sector that took place in April this year. Thank you, Chair.
Could we be favored with those reports? Thank you very much. I think we're going to move now to the entities, but I think we need to take a break. Because we've been seated for quite a long time. Could it, how many minutes, sorry? Yeah, let's take a 5 minutes leg stretch.
Yeah, Well, I want to hear what the quality is. Now you will have your chance. No. Okay, all right.
I'm going to go to the next one.